Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Congressman Chris Jacobs is joining us on WBEN this morning. And we've got to get to a lot, Congressman. Relief at the pump, though, first and foremost. There does not seem to be a lot of support for this suspension of the federal gas tax from President Biden. Where do you stand on this?
Good morning, first. I have not seen any evidence that would result in savings getting down to the consumer, to the person at the pump. I think it's a kind of a gimmick, and it was kind of similar to when he said he was tapping the strategic reserves. I think we saw a blip for a momentary relief of a couple cents. And I think we'd have the same thing. I think this is a diversion away from the failed policies of anti-domestic production that this administration has started from day one, when they canceled the Keystone Pipeline on day one. And all down the line, they have just been hostile to domestic production. And the markets and the producers have responded. And now we have this record level of high gas prices as a result of bad policies. And look, I'm for green energy, but we need to be level-headed on the transition. And this administration does not seem to do that. And people are paying week in, week out at the pump as a result of this failure.
There's a lot of people putting blame at, you know, different places. Everyone's pointing their finger. But, you know, at its core, this gas price problem, let's say it is simple supply and demand, like every, you know, higher price that we see and we're supposed to believe. Isn't lowering or getting rid of the federal gas tax doing the opposite of fixing that problem? If you're stimulating demand by lowering the price and then, I mean, really not increasing capacity at all, wouldn't that just kind of kick the problem down the road?
Yeah, you're marketing something that's really not doing anything, but you're incentivizing people to, priming the pump for people being more ready to go to the pump more. So I think you're right. I think you actually could drive up long-term the prices. When you try to tinker with the edges of the marketplace as opposed to the core reasons that we are here. And look, we did not have to be here. At the end of the Trump administration, we were a net exporter. We were producing more domestically, and I view myself as pro-environment, and actually we are doing things counter to the environment when we are not producing domestically, because we produce oil and gas much cleaner than anywhere else in the world, especially Vladimir Putin's oil and gas. So this is bad on every front, what we've done here, this policy.
Another reason that members of Congress are not in favor of this is they don't think this is going to be passed on to the consumer, which is something that you mentioned there, too. But how can oil companies do that? How can they keep that tax savings for themselves?
Yeah, I don't know exactly how that works. I've talked to a lot in the industry, not at the level of the ExxonMobil, but more of the people on stations, and they are... They just say the way the system works from the point in time of production down to the level of the pump. I mean, look, you might get a cent or two, but I doubt it's going to be whatever 18 cents that we have. And let's, even if you do get the 18 cents, it's not a significant decrease to compare to where were we a year and a half ago. We were paying half what we're paying now. And unless we do some more real substantive changes in our policies, this, you know, maybe it results in a little bit of savings, but long term, it's not changing the trajectory that we've been experiencing now, where we have the highest rates that we're paying. And look, I represent a rural area where diesel is huge, and farm equipment and long travel times. My constituents are suffering dramatically. So this is really serious, and this is not, in my mind, a serious proposal.
Switching focus to gun control legislation, which is kind of making its way through Washington, we're hearing that there are about 14 senators said to be supporting this gun reform bill. What do you make of the bill that's going through right now that could be approved?
Yes, I think it's looking very positive that the Senate is going to approve this. This is significant, a bipartisan, truly bipartisan piece of legislation. It's probably the most significant gun violence legislation, prevention legislation we've had in almost 30 years. And I think it's a good step forward. I think it's a meaningful. I think it's comprehensive. And I've talked a lot about issues like 18-year-olds having semi-automatic high-capacity guns like the one that killed 10 Buffalonians, that I don't think 18-year-olds should have access to that. This bill does not do that, but what it does do, if you're under 21 or under, there are more rigorous requirements to be able to obtain such a firearm. And also, it resolves the inherent issue that we have had. If an 18-year-old is trying to get a semi-automatic and you do a background check, many of the records are not attainable right now because they're a minor, either mental health or legal problems that they've had as a minor. This bill resolves that, so that information can be known in a confidential way to the authorities that there's a problem there and this young person should not have such a high-capacity weapon. So I think that's significant. Straw purchases, which has been a big issue for people, and what we see in law enforcement, a lot of people, how they get illegal firearms, and what's called the boyfriend loophole, which deals with domestic violence and firearms, which is a huge, huge issue. But the bill also goes to, hardening our schools, funding for school security and safety, and mental health, significant money for mental health. And we know we have a mental health crisis that's only gotten worse since COVID. So, again, I think it's comprehensive, and I think, is it everything everybody pro-gun control wants? No. And is it too much for people who are absolutists about any changes? No. But I think it's good, and I'm going to be supportive. And I've been working a lot with my colleague, Tony Gonzalez, who represents Uvalde, Texas, where the Uvalde shooting was. And we are both supportive, and we are going to advocate hard to make this truly bipartisan bill on the House side.
Congressman, the body armor bill that you and Congressman Brian Higgins came out with in the last couple of weeks, I know it's not in this bipartisan measure. Are you disappointed about that? And does it still have a chance of passage?
No, I think it does. I think the timing was such that we didn't get this going. We moved pretty quickly, but this was already had wheels, this legislation, before we got this passed, and we still do not have a Senate co-sponsor. But, this came out of the terrible tragedy in Buffalo, and Aaron Salter, the hero, former police officer, was a security guard, who had a firearm and tried to take out the shooter, but due to the fact that the shooter had military-grade body armor on his body and his head, he was not penetrable with the firearm that Aaron had. And as a result, he killed Aaron Salter and then subsequently almost every other person that died that day. We came to a resolution, Brian Higgins and I, that this makes no sense, that military-grade body armor should be available to anybody under the sun. So we have a bipartisan bill, Grace Mang from New York City area, myself, Brian Higgins, and we're talking, we're hoping that Senator Schumer would consider doing something in the Senate, which would certainly give it heft to move more quickly. And we're very grateful to Kim Salter, Aaron's wife, who agreed to have the bill named after Aaron. And we believe this will save lives.
Your removal from the political picture after this election cycle, are you dismayed at all about, you know, everything you're talking about, working with other people, trying to get a bill forward? You know, that sounds like the way things are supposed to work, yet you removed yourself from contention for a congressional seat in a redistrict mapped because of your stance. These weeks later, what's your feeling on that? Are you dismayed at all that you can't have a different stance than, you know, the party head on any particular issue, it seems?
Yeah, I mean, I think this issue in our party in particular is is one of these issues. I've certainly come to realize that the majority of the Republican, the core Republican voters, at least in a district that I represent, that is heavily rural, has a very absolutist view that any increased regulation or controls is just a step towards evisceration of the Second Amendment. And it's very unfortunate. I hope when we pass something like this that they realize that it's not the case. Look, the Democrats have a similar issue with abortion. You know, they have one pro-life member of Congress in the entire congressional delegation over there, and he almost lost in a primary. So I don't think this is good, this absolutist, that there's not big tents on either party and openness to, you know, this one issue you differently. I think it's, you know, it's a polarized time. I felt that if I kept running, this would be the only issue with a lot of outside money and commercials running from the NRA and things like that that would distort this issue and make progress worse. So I just felt it was the right thing to do to move forward where I could be where I am right now, an advocate saying what I believe without that onslaught. And you know, I it's been an honor to serve in Congress, but you know, I never intended to do it forever, and I will be continuing to serve my community in other capacities, and I will certainly be an advocate for these issues outside of government.
No regrets?
Oh, no regrets, no.
Congressman, we appreciate the time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Congressman Chris Jacobs here on WBEN Buffalo.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.